As you've heard earlier this morning, over the next 9 weeks, we'll be following the Revised Common Lectionary. It's a system that splits the scriptures up into sections for those who aren't familiar with that. And it enables the Bible to be read over the course of 3 years congregationally. Again, however, we'll only be doing this for the summertime as we join the world, Christendom in some ways, in reading the scriptures. And so we are sharing, once again, a liturgy that spans time and continent and denomination. And it's wonderful to count ourselves part of the larger body of Christ and the community that follows Jesus. You know, politics seems to dominate the news media these days. How many of you have already been called on the phone with a poll from one of the political parties in Canada? Anyone? And sometimes you might get this phone call and it's just nothing on the other end. It makes you wonder if the robocalls are just starting, right? Well, the U.S. is now preparing for an election as we are as well. But there seems to be surrounded by much more maybe circus and theatrics and a little bit more media. Surprisingly, maybe even alarmingly, Donald Trump has emerged as the leading Republican candidate. How about that, hey? The guy who led You're Fired, you know, from the Apprentice. How many of you have ever watched that show? It's a bit dated now, but I used to just watch that to watch the guy say, You're fired at the end, right? And see, he loved doing that. I'm just waiting for someone from the Republican Party to say that to him, because he is just, man, he is making a fool of himself. Since the start of Mr. Trump's presidential campaign, a vexing question has hovered over his candidacy. Why have so many party leaders who are privately appalled by Mr. Trump's remarks about immigration, illegal immigrants, and even Mexicans? How come they have not said anything to renounce him publicly? He has become more undignified as he's gone further on in his public remarks and all the little sound bites that he's quoted by. His latest soundbite sounds off his opinions on what he would do in Iraq with ISIS. He says this, I would take away the wealth from ISIS, which is fair, but I'd do this by bombing the heck out of Iraq's oil fields. I wonder how Iraqis feel about that. And then sending in oil companies to rebuild the infrastructure. I wonder how they feel about that as well. Even U.S. military leaders who have led campaigns in Iraq and Syria question the smarts and logistics of such a strategy, not to mention the political fallout as Trump makes statements like, there is no Iraq, just warring factions. I wonder how the Iraqi people feel about that. Just imagine what the whole American Foreign Service Department must be thinking as he gets in front of the camera once again. I mean, Trump says things for effect, right? He says things for drama, to get a reaction, and to get people talking. And that, in one respect, he's succeeding very well. People are talking. And he hopes it'll buy him voter and financial support. And surprisingly, his support is growing. Wherever he goes, his latest stop was in Arizona. It was a sellout. They had to turn thousands of people away. But I'm sure that they welcomed their finances. His comments are calculated. Yet the fireworks have only started. Trump will certainly become more undignified than this. In his book, Beyond Words, Frederick Buechner says this about King David. He says this, to see what there was about David that made Israel adore him like no other king it ever had. As good a place to look as any is the account of how he captured Jerusalem and brought in the Ark of the Covenant. Jerusalem was a major win for the new young king, a hill town considered so untakeable that the inhabitants had a saying to the effect that a blind man and a cripple could hold it against any attacking force. You can see that in 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 6. Can you imagine that? The Romans, they can come. A blind man can hold them off. A layman can hold them off. Just to remind people who it was that had nevertheless finally taken it, David's first move was to change its name to the City of David. So think about that for a minute. There's a whole bunch of different warring nations. The Romans weren't there yet, but the Assyrians, the Babylonians, even the distant power of Egypt, all these powers were still out there. And the people who were occupying Jerusalem would say, even a blind man could defend these city walls. So David goes in with a skilled troop and takes it over. His second move was a brilliant maneuver for giving his victory the stamp of divine approval by trotting out that holy box, the Ark of the Covenant. It was a box of acacia wood overlaid with gold that was known as the Ark, and it contained who knows what? Does anyone know what it contained? Aaron's rod, the Ten Commandments. What else? There was something else. Manna, right? A jar of manna. Which is interesting because we know that manna after a day would spoil. So God did something there to allow these things to represent him in this box, right? It was close as ever Israel ever officially got to a representation in space of their God, right? Who dwelled in eternity. That's what we've been hearing this morning. David had the ark loaded onto a custom-built cart and made a regular circus parade out of it, right? Complete with horns and harps, cymbals, psalteries. Do you know what psalteries are? I had to look that up. What's a psaltery? It's a stringed instrument, kind of like a primitive guitar, but it was its own instrument, kind of like a lyre. Not to mention himself high-stepping out in front like a undignified stripper. It was nothing like Dancing with the Stars, if you watched that television show. He didn't know how to dance. He was a warrior. When they finally made it into town, he set up a big tent to keep out the weather, had refreshments passed around, and it was all on the house, right? And just so nobody would forget who was picking up the tab, he did the lion's share of praying himself and personally took up the collection afterwards. Kind of makes you think of Trump, doesn't it? So far, it was none of it, anything a good public relations department couldn't have dreamed up for him. But the next thing was something else again. He stripped down to his tidy whities. And then with everyone looking on, including his wife, who was a high-class girl named Michal, who gave his administration some credibility as the late King Saul's daughter, David then did a dance in his tidy whities. And maybe it started out as just another shrewd political public move, but it wasn't that for long. With trumpets blaring and drums beating, it was Camelot all over again. The royal Camelot. And for once, that royal young redhead didn't have to talk up the bright future and high hopes because he was himself the future at its brightest. And there were no hopes higher than the ones his people had in him. And for once, unlike the Christian coalition, or our evangelical right, just south of us, or today's greater evangelical group, he didn't have to drag God in for politics' sake. Because it was obvious to everybody that this time God was there on his own terms. Just imagine David dancing in front of this whole parade, in front of the whole city, and what started out as a political show turned into an act of worship. How they cut loose together. David and Yahweh whirling around before the ark in such a passion that they caught fire from each other and blazed up in a single flame of such magnificence that not even the dressing down of Michal could dim the glory of it. Here's the take home for us. David was a man of passion. And the Bible doesn't hold back the fact that he had feet of clay, just like the rest of us, just like Donald Trump. He was a flawed human being, like we all are, if not more so. Like you and I, he was self-serving and deceitful. He was lustful and vain, but on the basis of that dance alone, you can see why it was David, more than anybody else, that Israel lost its heart to. And why? when Jesus of Nazareth came riding into Jerusalem on his flea-bitten mule 1,000 years later. Why, it was as the Son of David that they hailed him. Thanks be to God.